I am Joanne Richmond. In my life off the mountaintop, I'm a pastor. I live in Westby, Wisconsin, and I'm here this week as the village philosopher. I have been asked to announce that this is a week where we have people who are hearing impaired with us. So our conversation is being interpreted. If you choose to speak this evening, before you speak, please raise your hand. That way the interpreter will know who is speaking, and it will be easier for her to interpret. All right, I would like to begin with prayer, so please pray with me. Creative God, we are your children, living in your image and likeness. We are creating. Thoughts and feelings guide us as we struggle to be faithful servants. Direct our sensibilities. Help us to grow in love and service. Amen. The topic this evening, if you read the board, is Roe versus Wade, and we deliberately spelled Roe wrong because we're using a water image this evening. Roe versus Wade, should the church get wet? Pun intended. I think because of the nature of the community here, it would be helpful for me to explain a little bit about what has happened within our judicial system in the last few weeks regarding the issue of abortion. Citizens of the United States have been overwhelmed by the Supreme Court's rulings, several of them, in the last many weeks. We're maybe overwhelmed by what they decided. Certainly, we are overwhelmed by the variety of the issues that they have decided to make decisions on. The media's coverage of these issues has also been extremely important to the way we now are thinking about them. Roe versus Wade was reopened this year. The Chief Justice deliberately led the court to a new conclusion regarding abortion. We are not going to debate abortion tonight. I can't say it any more clearly than that. We are not going to debate abortion this evening. Our topic, Roe versus Wade, should the church get wed, is meant to be a discussion of a particular relationship, that being the relationship of church and state. Roe versus Wade is provocative, and it has been for the 16 years that it's been with us as a Supreme Court decision. This decision provokes the passions of many different people, and it provokes all sorts of pain. It provokes thought, and it provokes action. I want to share a little bit of the history so we all know what it is we're going to be talking about. 16 years ago, a majority of the Supreme Court saw a fundamental right involved in a woman's access to abortion. They prohibited undue interference in a woman's ability to have access to abortion. Last week, the court opened the door for states wishing to limit abortion, specifically allowing states to restrict the use of public facilities, funds, and I believe personnel. What this decision means is that the abortion battle, if we're going to call it that, moves back to the state forum. Legislators and media critics have said in recent weeks, they've predicted an incredible battle now on the political front in many states, if not all states. Our question this evening rests on this example, what's happened for this issue, this example of an issue that has become political but is argued morally, frequently by people using their own religious values. This is, perhaps this evening, going to be an incredible public debate. Throughout the United States, it probably will be an incredible public debate. It's a legislative debate now. It's going to continue to be a judicial debate, probably this fall. The question is, should the church, the organized church, jump into these already murky waters? Should we expect our church bodies, whatever our church persuasion is, should we expect our church bodies to become involved in the debate? Should church bodies, whether they be Roman Catholic or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America or Presbyterian or whatever the body, should they have written social statements about this issue or any other matter that's before our judicial or legislative bodies? Or should the church remain silent? Should we speak then as individual believers rather than as a united body? Should we, as people of faith, separate our church identity from our civic identity? That's the question, or the questions this evening. And I'm going to work really hard to keep us on that track. I'll do my best, okay? We have a process for discussion. First of all, we're going to stop at 10 o'clock. We shouldn't expect any sort of resolution, I don't think. I would like to encourage you, when you speak, to use I statements. I think, I feel, I believe. I'd like to ask you to respect the thoughts and the feelings of others, to please be as brief as you can, and to consider the fact that we do have a time limit. Now, to begin this discussion, I introduce to you Michael Pellett. He's the professor of systematic theology at Lutheran Theological Seminary in Saskatoon, Canada. And I've asked him to just have a brief statement for us on this issue of church and state and the church's involvement in political matters. I don't know where he is. There you are.
I'm hiding. Yeah, a brief statement can go quite a ways. I guess to begin this discussion, well, what I would like to say is that one has to distinguish, first of all, the separation between church and state as institution over against a distinction we may want to make between religion and politics. And certainly, as Christians and as citizens, our religious values, beliefs, understandings should indeed do affect our politics. Now, that means that while we may have institutional separation between church and state, which is a particular political way of doing things, that does not mean that the church has nothing to say about these kinds of issues, and that we as Christians who carry on our callings as Christians in the world would certainly be involved and concerned about these kind of things. That if we were to bracket off politics from the Christian area, it's basically, the bottom line there is consigning politics to the realm of atheism, to say God is not involved there. God has no concerns there. What goes on within the realm of politics is of no concern to God and Christians. And I don't think that we would want to support the logic of that kind of claim. And so, just as a beginning overview, I put forward the contention that by being Christians in the world, we are already and always engaged in political actions and political activities. The question then becomes, what is the way that we as Christians best carry out a Christian understanding of service in the world and for the world?
Response, or anyone want to continue that thought? I think what I heard him saying, in part, is that we do have a responsibility as individuals to live and express the political opinions that our faith shapes inside us. But does the church have that responsibility? That's the question.
I think that the church does have that responsibility, and that there's really nothing that is apolitical. You may claim to be apolitical and not concerned about politics, but I think what you're really saying is that you're inactive. And when you're inactive, you put forth a political stance. By your silence, you're saying that it's okay. So the church cannot help but be political. So, like it or not, we're already in it.
Through silence.
Through silence.
Yes.
I agree also, and I think that the church has, the Lutheran church has a long ways to go in terms of some of the organizational things that have been done by other groups, whether it be the Moral Majority or groups such as that, in identifying causes they feel strongly about and in identifying ways to be effective in the political spectrum. Because if, like Sherry said, if we're not, then it's just saying the status quo is what the gospel would have us do. So I think it's very important that Lutherans and other denominations identify, collaborate, and focus on issues that they feel are of importance, and then determine the best way to proceed from there.
Go ahead.
What happens if the church body that you belong to doesn't look at the issue in the same light and doesn't see the gospel being done according to the way they see an issue? I mean, is there agreements on an issue? Is that the doctrine? I mean, is that the gospel? I mean, is that what church is?
Well, I think what you're asking is, what if you personally don't believe with the statement that your church is making on the issue?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. It's a good question.
Thanks. Thank you for making sense out of it.
You're welcome. Does anybody have an answer? Well, go ahead.
I don't have an answer. But I think her concern is a real valid one, and I think it's one that we have to be very careful with. And I think in a lot of reasons that's why church and state or political issues are separated out. And even when we came to the original church, or the original Christian church with Christ centered into it, there were still matters of church and state that he explicitly said we needed to remain separate. And I don't think you can alienate part of a group and still keep together your church community. And I really, as a focus to that, is many of the things that came up with the Synodical Convention this year were very moral issues and very, half and half. And when our church even tried to take a vote on where the gray areas were or how the congregation felt, it itself came out almost 50-50 and almost got to the point where, you know, the individual people who went to the conference had to vote their own conscience. And I think that some of the reason we need to, or we should do that, I don't think not saying anything means that that's the way we believe. But I think it says that as a group of Christians or followers, that's, we have to fight the political battles on our own.
When I was in seminary in Chicago, it used to be interesting that we'd have all kinds of debates about various political issues. And it sometimes seemed to me that if you did not adhere to one particular viewpoint, you were not in the company of the righteous, the redeemed, and the saved. And I think probably all of you may have had experiences similar to that in discussions with Christian people about various issues. And not to debate the abortion thing, because we're not going to do that. there are a variety. I believe that people of faith, people of goodwill, can take one of a variety of different positions in that debate, as you could in any other debate. My concern is that when we come out with social statements, and I'm a big booster of the social statements because I think that they help us to get issues distilled and clarified so that we can do some cogent discussions on them. But my concern when a social statement comes out is that that social statement can become the orthodox position. And if you don't adhere to that orthodox position, your Christianity and your commitment to Jesus Christ is somehow called into question. And we Lutheran people, I think, really have to be very, very concerned with that. You know, our faith and our salvation is not based on whether I can adhere to the statement on sex, marriage, and the family of the old LCA. My salvation rests in Christ.
There are two questions that I would like, I guess, clarification on. One is what we mean by politics. Do we mean, as most people mean by politics, do we mean government, which affects everybody? I mean, a lot of people don't want to get involved in politics, but government affects everybody. And the second question, I guess, is, again, what is the purpose of the church? Is it the ministry to the individuals, for them to go out? Or is it for them to be reflected through their church? I mean, I think sometimes this may be an individual decision on what each church decides its ministry is. But I think it should be clarified.
I can answer the first question just in what my definition of political was in the opening statement I made. And that is just, it's maybe not a true definition philosophically. But I'm looking at what's going to be happening in states. Already happening. There were several governors who right away said, okay, let's get this before our legislative body. I'm saying, do we as a church lobby now in those states for one side or the other? So I'm looking specifically at what's going to be happening in the states now until...
So
whenever
it's equivalent to government.
Government, yeah. Legislative process, or judicial process. Even though we may not think the judges are going to listen to us, we've been having protests in D.C. assuming that they were going to. So the second half of the question was...
what the purpose of the church is to minister to the individual or to be a reflection of their individual opinion, their collective opinion.
And I'll throw that out to the floor. Does anybody have an answer for that? Yeah.
I think it's to be a Christian witness in every way we can, to live out the values of our faith. And we can do that as an institution, we can do it as individuals, and we do that on other issues right now, through the church's institution in the Lutheran Office of Public Policy that exists in most of our state capitals. Mm-hmm. But we don't have a social statement, and the emphasis of that office hasn't been to deal with the abortion issue, so it hasn't been on record and has not been working on that issue. But on the hunger and issues of supporting the poor and other kinds of social justice issues where we have solid statements, we have and do participate in that, and we need all of your help in contacting your legislators on those issues when we have that kind of solidarity and commitment within our own church.
It's an interesting question on what does any churches, other churches do have offices like that, the Lutheran Office for Public Policy. How do they decide which issues they're going to deal with and which ones they don't? How do they know which ones you have solidarity on? Maybe hunger is an issue that we can assume we've got solidarity on. Who wants to be against world hunger, you know? But there's an issue of human suffering in that's obvious. There's an issue of human suffering in abortion that may not be so obvious. How do we make those decisions? Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see y'all. Yes.
That's okay. I think there's a creative way to go about this. At our church, for several weeks running, we had a person who submitted a prayer card to the assistant minister to pray to stop the murder of abortion. The murder of unborn children. We have a new assistant minister each week, so each person had to deal with that request their own way. Some ignored it, some mumbled through the prayer. The best solution I heard was what Aline said. She said she prayed for the day when abortion would be a memory. And I thought that was a good way of saying it, because she was, I think, going at it both ways, that I don't think anyone likes abortion, but what do we do in the meantime? We work so that we'll be. So I thought that was a creative way of getting wet.
Yes, no.
Well, what I was going to add is the issue of abortion, or the issue of gay rights or gays being allowed to be in the ministry of the church, versus an issue of hunger or world need, are two completely separate arenas. You know, and there are definitely arenas that are going to divide people. And I don't think, you know, as you said, nobody's going to object to world hunger. But there are issues and there are real objections, and when it comes to the body that you're serving, you have to make the decision as to where that stands. I mean, does it stand as a whole group issue, or does it stand as individual issues and individuals doing what they need to do? Because I see it as a real area to alienate people also.
But should we run away from it just because it's an area that can alienate people? A lot of people said the same thing about the civil rights movement. They said we can't touch on civil rights within the church because we're going to alienate people.
In layman's terms, what we're saying here is that we're trying to decide whether or not the church should get involved in abortion, in the decision whether or not to have abortion.
We're trying to be real philosophical and say, should the church become involved in any issue of the state? But we're using abortion as the example so we can speak to abortion, yes.
Okay.
And
so
maybe we should do that tonight, to speak to this one issue.
So if I'm to say something, I'm to say I personally think that the church should or should not.
If you're comfortable with that, yeah.
Actually, no, my heart is beating in my element right now.
Mine was before and it's not now.
Oh, so okay. It'll be Well, I personally think, because that's what you said. I personally think that you can't be half and half on that, because if the church is involved in whether or not you should have abortion, then if they decide that you shouldn't have an abortion and you do, then of course they're, don't they kick you out of the church or something like that? I mean, or something, well, okay, maybe only Catholics do that. I don't know. But something's that, okay. I don't know. But when they look upon that, if you did, if you belong to a church that decided that you shouldn't have abortion, would they look upon you as, would they look down upon you if you did? This is what I'm wondering.
It's a good question. Would the... I'd like to affirm you for the way you stated that, and it's a good question, because if we do, if we as a church do get into the public arena, let's say on this abortion issue, and we say that we don't think women should have abortions, we think that abortions should be regulated, and then I'm a pastor, a member of the parish I serve, has an abortion. Do I say, sorry, that's against church policy, and throw her out the door? That's what you're asking.
Yes. Yeah.
I hope I won't do that. But that's a question. If, you know, do we live under the law or do we live under grace? And does that affect this issue? There was a hand up here.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're going back to things like hunger as another case. In fact, it is very controversial, otherwise they wouldn't be lobbying, because they're supporting certain ways of handling hunger. And I, you know, I went to the seminary, I don't know what those ways are, you know, and I would imagine a lot of laity in the church don't know what those ways are. I think if we are, I believe that if we are talking about the church being more active in terms of lobbying, and the church will also have to be more active in making making the congregations know, aware of what they are saying and what specifically they are supporting, not just we're against people being hungry. You know, we're for aid packets that do produce these kinds of effects. So I think if that is to happen, there's going to have to be an increased amount of communication, especially on an issue like abortion, where people do have a lot of hard opinions.
Yeah.
She's had her hand up for a long time.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's hard for me to see in the sham.
It's okay. I'm kind of in the dark here. I think that the church has absolutely no business telling me whether or not I can get an abortion. I think that the latest Supreme Court ruling is an absolute setback for me.
Okay.
I don't see how the church can come up with a decision like that. If it's the church's body is split right down the middle, 50%, how are they going to decide whether or not, you know, this is the law? It's possible.
It's interesting. I'd like to ask the question, no matter what your religious persuasion, how many of you have been to a meeting of your church body where decisions are being made so you can see that process? How many of you have attended one of those?
Hold up green
cards. Yeah, hold up your green cards. That's a good Lutheran statement. Because, thank you.
Green cards, right.
Right. Yes. Because at the synod, in the Lutheran church, we have synods. And at the synod assembly, we have issues like that, that at every assembly I've been to, we make decisions, like the issues of apartheid in Namibia, South Africa. We, at the last assembly meeting I was at, we talked about apartheid, we talked about divestment, we talked about world hunger, we talked about just a whole list of moral, social issues. And we made decisions.
Yeah.
We voted yes, we voted no.
Issues like apartheid and world hunger, those are issues that the church can say, you know, well, we've got to do something. But on abortion, it's the church can go either way.
I think. What's the difference?
In the green.
Yeah, it's interesting to bring that up. theological issues aside and whether the church should be involved, on a practical level in discussing this issue of church resolutions and convention recommendations with different congresspeople, I've heard from various representatives that they pay far more attention to the letters and phone calls from individuals than they do to any resolution passed by any religious body. So on a practical level, it's far more effective for individuals to get involved than it is for a resolution to get passed that may or may not represent the will of the church body.
What was interesting, I'm from Wisconsin, I said that. At the last Synod Assembly meeting that I attended, whenever we had a political issue like that and we wanted our Synod to send a letter to elected people, we also voted that each person present who voted in favor of that would also send a letter. So that was an interesting little thing to do. Yeah?
Well, that's true, but there's another side of it. And that, coming from Chicago, I can speak with some experience that we have a process of elected people. You know, and it's important to remember that the church is a we. And we keep talking about the church as though it's some kind of outside body, and it's we. We have a process that ensures that. And we elect people who speak quite frequently on behalf of us. And that happened in Chicago, where our bishop, the Chicago Synod Bishop, and the Roman Catholic Archdiocese entered into a signed agreement. And it was just an agreement to dialogue. And the media immediately turned it into an abortion issue and asked the question. And that right away shed a whole new light on it. But, you know, we have to take seriously what our elected officials are saying. And the only way they're going to know is if we participate in the process. You know, whether we agree or not, you know, it's important that the bishops know that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm having trouble just with the whole, with trying to define a church. I mean, say your congregation gets together and you decide to take a stand. And you come out and say, well, we as a church have decided. No one's going to say, well, that's what, I mean, they may say that's what your church thinks. But, I mean, where is the line drawn? Is it the governing body of the Lutheran Church? Is it the whole Christian body of God? And I don't think you can define a church. I think even if we did come out with a statement that people would say, well, that's the Lutheran Church that wants that statement. And when it comes right down to it, it's individual decision. And any actions or social statements are going to have to be on the part of the individual or a group of individuals within the church who feel a certain way. But I don't think you can place the church onto a group or a person.
I guess what Michael said about the institution of the church, if they're going to play in the process of the institution of the government, then I see their parallel. You can have a national body of the church and then go down to each congregation or the state level, and then you can go down to the individual. And, I mean, it's set up that way, and so it can play the game any way you want to play. It seems that, I guess, I believe that the institution of the church should be facilitating its congregations and its institution to have its members think about their political beliefs in a religious way, or to provoke thought about the issues that are before them, so that, for me, if the Lutheran Church makes a statement, it's just words. And what happens is, and to prove ourselves as Christians, it needs action. And whatever means can get action from the members, us as Christians, that's where the answer lies for me. I mean, if the number of Christians or Lutherans or whatever that don't, or do that, make a stand on the issue and act in alignment with that, then that would mean that the church, the institution, has done its job. Yeah.
But I think that there, sorry.
Here, let's go here first, okay?
abortion aside, I think a potentially greater issue here is the whole issue of the Supreme Court. They are not elected officials, they are appointed, and their capacity that they've shown in the last few months to overrule prior decisions by other Supreme Court justices, I think is deplorable, and I think the church should act towards that aspect of it instead.
Were you before? Okay. Okay.
You want to say something? Well, I was going to respond to Diane's comment that it seems like the question then is how influential churches should be on some of these issues, and I think that that was kind of addressed earlier in how guilt-provoking people can be. Raymond Huffhausen has come out in favor of this last Supreme Court ruling, and he's a very powerful and influential person in the Seattle and probably the whole Puget Sound area, and I just think I feel pretty disappointed. And I know some of those Lutheran bishops that I really admire have come out strongly against abortion, and I just really disagree with not only their position, but maybe their power in, or their use of power in that particular issue.
Can I clarify something?
Yes.
I guess, I don't know if I heard you right, Andra, but I guess what I was trying to say is that the church, the institution shouldn't facilitate a stance or a persuasion, but more facilitate dialogue and waste dialogue and not make a stand, but more provoke action.
Okay. I'm having a hard time knowing the order that hands go up, so if you have to wait, I'm sorry. Michael, do you want to say something now?
I'll let others.
Okay. Okay.
Mary.
Yeah, I don't know exactly which side of this debate I would fall on, except to say that it seems to me with a personal decision such as abortion, we can do a lot of heady conversation and dialogue in our churches. And I was part of writing a social statement for the LCA on nuclear weapons. And we had a lot of heady discussion about that. But an issue like abortion, it seems to me when it comes down to an individual person thinking about it, the decision becomes very personal. And personal is religious and is spiritual. And I wonder how many people would look and say, what does my church say about this? I think a lot of people would. I think a lot of people wouldn't. I think a lot of people would go to one pastor and get one opinion, go to a second pastor and get an opposite opinion, go to three or four friends and maybe get support for whatever the decision might be. And it's a deeply spiritual decision, but I don't know that having a social statement is going to help or hurt that individual in this particular discussion. Now, on a more cerebral, well, I don't even know what's more cerebral. I think apartheid is not more cerebral if we're really in touch with the global meaning of apartheid personally. But so I guess I just pose that question. Mm-hmm.
Well, what if the church came out pro-choice? I mean, that's not saying yes, that's not saying no. That's pro-choice. That's giving, that's if there's a woman here who is going to have an abortion, the church is saying, okay, you make your decision. It's your choice.
Yes. But didn't we say, but in the old LCA statement on sex, marriage, and family, we did say that. And then it was amended, and I believe it was 1978. But originally it had said that this was a personal choice made finally between the woman, her doctor, and God. Mm-hmm. And we had come out as being pro-choice.
I find that a lot of churches are not discussing this issue. And I feel that all of our Protestant churches, our Catholic, the Jewish communities, should be discussing and talking about this issue. I don't think, though, that after talking about it and understanding Christ as best we can, or God as best we can, that each of us then has to make their own decision. But not only with the doctor, but with your minister, your guiding spiritual person, and then finally to make a decision as to which way to go. But I don't think any group is going to get anywhere by coming up with a definite statement on this, because the situation is so different for every woman that gets an abortion. And how is the church going to sit there and judge that? That is going to have to be a judgment left to God, between God and that person. And that's where it should be. That's my feeling.
Yeah.
I was just worried if the church decided to, so they made a decision that there should be no abortions, how do you know if all the churches in all the world decided that one decision? Because I'm not Catholic, and I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone, but I'm ignorant on exactly what Catholicism is all about. But everything goes back to the Pope, if I'm right.
For the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, Roman Catholic. And so what he decides goes to all the churches, but let's say one Lutheran church decides that there should be pro-choice, you can decide which way you want to go, and one says there shouldn't be any abortion at all. You get confused on to which way you should go, because you're Lutheran, but one decides one way and one decides the other. So, I mean, how do you know? It's a lot easier to decide for yourself which way to go, because if you base your decision on the church, then, I mean, the church is a bunch of different opinions. It's not your own personal choice. It's what a person says is right or wrong. And I personally think that it should be your personal choice, because it's what's happening inside you. You should decide for yourself what to do.
The reason that I feel like this is such a murky issue is the reason that it was addressed at the very beginning, and then we've kind of left it. And that is that there are other organized church bodies or people in the name of religion organizing and making statements. And that's why this issue is such an excellent example of what do we do as Lutherans or Roman Catholics or Presbyterians or whatever, because there are other people organizing in the name of religion. And, you know, the Roman Catholic Church has made it clear to us that they are anti-abortion. What do we think about them doing that? And if we're going to say the Lutheran Church is pro-choice, not saying you shouldn't or you should, but you can make that choice, which is what I heard you saying, are we as a church going to go out and make that clear publicly? Or are we going to let other bodies that have organized who are anti be organized and win in these state battles?
Yeah.
Because we respect the independence of each of us as individual citizens. That's why this is such a yeah.
Well, but every church body, the people in the church have a right to form a political organization to fight a political problem, or as individuals to join a political organization and to fight a political battle. It seems to me we're using a little mixed metaphor in a way. We need to be in a political battle in order to get anywhere here, because this is the arena that we're fighting in, and we're using a spiritual institution to do a little thing out of its way. I'm not sure. I personally believe that a church ought to nurture its people. The institution of the church is for shepherding, for nurturing, for growth, for your personal development, for your faith, whatever, you know, all that. I believe those individuals then are the result of that growth, and they may do with it whatever they like and form whatever they like, and as individuals or as groups or whatever it might be, but the institution of the church, if it wants the institution of the government to stay out of its business, has to be a little bit careful about getting involved institutionally itself. So,
yeah, I do. Yeah.
I can't talk very much about it. It seems to me that if a decision like Roe versus Wade is going to affect the life of the congregation, no matter whether we want it to or not, what would be helpful is not to decide whether the church should get involved. The church is involved because we're the church. But what would be helpful from the institutional church, it seems, is not a statement saying how we should all line up with the people that think they're the ones that make the decisions, but rather some help in helping me and other people make decisions, which means that is this issue being discussed theologically, then what are the issues? Is this issue being discussed as a term in terms of, say, the woman's health? What are the issues? I mean, instead of having the church come out and say, we're pro whatever, or something, it'd be better, I think, just as a voter, I get a pre-ballot, and somebody argues and gives the pros and cons of each argument. I think that would be more helpful than having the church take a one-stance position.
I guess I was thinking about when I see a church body make a decision for everyone in that body, I see a denial of allowing people to think for themselves and to encourage that. And so I guess at the risk of losing lobbying or pull in a political situation, I would go for the long run and hope that if the institution of the church could set an example of allowing its members to learn to think for themselves, that in the long run it would be those individuals who would be writing their congressmen, and in the end would have more pull. And for me, it's just a more Christ-like example.
Someone was raising their hand over here for a long time. Is that you?
Okay. Yeah, it was me. One point that someone here made a comment about if they differed with the church's opinion, I would say it would be a responsibility to let that be known to your church. And then there was a lot of discussions about making finalized sort of statements. And I think that can be very dangerous for a lot of reasons. For reason number one is the dialogue may stop there. And I think that's what's more important than the final statement is the process of getting there. Another problem is someone who is not involved in the dialogue can see this, oh, well, this is how I think. And so their decision or stance lacks a lot of integrity. I'm not sure how to go about it. I kind of like what Di was saying, but I do think it's important for the church to come out against forms of oppression, and it's difficult to know how best to do that, but I think it is important to be done.
Yeah.
The problem with the church, the institutional church, is that it's primarily men. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, as far as the Lutheran Church, there are more women active in each individual congregation than there are men. But when you look up in the people who are making decisions and a higher, if you want to look at it hierarchically, which I wish we wouldn't do, but there are more people in positions to make decisions than are men, I'm afraid, at this point. Yes.
I do not think the church, the institutional church, should take a position on the abortion issue, because like our government, the church is a democracy. However, in contrast to the government, which rules by majority, I think the church, on the other hand, needs to protect the rights of the minority.
Which is interesting, because in most constitutions for the synods of the Lutheran Church, our assemblies are run by majority rule. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you go to a synod assembly, you could vote. You can vote on anything. If it's a majority, they'll pass it.
Yep.
We can. I go to a synod assembly, they could say, we vote that we don't use the Bible anymore in our church. If it passed by the majority, it'll pass. That's the way it is. That's the honest truth.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we have to look at the way we resolve issues. I mean, if you can vote by the majority determines what the church is going to do instead of the scripture, instead of the Bible, I think we're losing.
In the green.
That's very true, but in the Lutheran Church, we also have a pretty humble understanding of church authority, and if people don't like it, we don't follow it. On the one hand, I appreciate church statements and having some decisions made, if they're well thought out, if the issues are addressed clearly, the various theological, social, historical, political concerns. But if I don't like it, I don't, you know, pump it in my parish, and no one's coming after me to move me out of Lutheran Church. It's different, the difference with the Catholic Church, you know, where the Pope speaks ex cathedra, you know, this is absolute truth, you don't buy it, you're gone. Lutheran Church, you don't like it, don't do it.
How long has it been since you were in seminary?
About 10 years.
Because right now there's a tremendous pressure on seminary students to be mainline. And if you're not mainline, you're not endorsed. I'm on an endorsement committee, so I look at seminary students, and I have to be part of that process that the Synod expects me to make decisions on whether someone stays in seminary or doesn't stay in seminary. And some of those are very political reasons why we decide. So it's not that easy to just throw it in the wastebasket and do whatever you want, because there are long-term effects for some. Yeah.
I just have a brief point of clarification as a Catholic.
Okay.
I've heard several comments this evening. There are Catholic priests that support pro-choice and that are not booted out by the Pope, who's in La La Land, you know, far away. I mean, I was at a Catholic women's ordination conference a few years back, and they were selling T-shirts that said, "The Holy Father is neither." And these are Catholic women. So anyway, it does exist, and I, as a Catholic woman, feel comfortable saying, I don't agree with you, Pope. And I'm still just as Catholic as anyone else. Mm-hmm. So.
But does it make a difference to you that the Pope has made a statement? I mean, does it matter?
No.
It doesn't matter to you individually.
No,
you're not. If he made a statement that was pro-choice, would it matter to you? I mean, if we agreed with what the Pope said or if we disagreed with what the Pope said, does that make a difference? If we agree as Lutherans with what our synod says or we disagree with what the Synod says, does that make a difference? And I don't want to assume that you're either pro-choice or, you know, pro-life, but does that affect our what we're going to say on this issue or any other? Yes.
Just what the Fisher pastor, since you've been in seminary, you know, sometimes I get real lonely in the church sometimes, in the institutional church. And I don't think it's very helpful to say the church, the institutional church. You know, what are we talking about? The Walt Disney Church? I mean, you know, the church is the church is the church. You know, it's in the local congregation. It's at synod assemblies. It's somehow mystically present here. It's the people who have died in the faith 2,000 years ago and people who are going to live in the faith 2,000 years from now. So I think the institutional church confuses things. But in the church, I sometimes find I become a very lonely person, because if you disagree with the position that the church has taken, and often the church makes positions which are boneheaded and stupid, and we all know that, and we Lutherans particularly know that. Councils have erred and will continue to err, I think is what Luther said. If you stand up against the institutional church sometimes, you're not invited back into the dialogue. You know, I found this at, you know, I found this at seminary. When there were statements being made about Central and South America, abortion, biomedical ethics, and if I took a contrary opinion to what the majority opinion was, I was kept around for the next two or three discussions, but then I wasn't invited back into the dialogue. And maybe that's a male power structure. Somebody said something about that. But to me, it's part of that power structure that says, we are the righteous and we have figured out what the truth is. How dare we say that? You can't say that. If somebody comes to me and says, Pastor Muter, is AIDS God's judgment against gays? If I say yes, I know the mind of God and I've broken the first commandment. If I say no, I know the mind of God and I've broken the first commandment. I don't know, because I'm not the righteous. I mean, you know, that's part of living in the gray.
I have a hard time not always answering.
Yeah.
I guess I slightly disagree that I think people do need to speak out and do speak out, even though it's against the flow, and we need those people. And we need reformation to constantly be happening and people to be posting theses on doors and things, or else we're a dead church. But I want to reiterate what I said earlier, and that is just that from my personal experience in the last couple of churches, I didn't even know synod conventions existed until I was invited to play for one. That was very eye-opening. I think in the past couple of churches I've been at, the council kind of sits around and says, oh, convention's coming up. Does anybody want to go? And sometimes they have to really struggle to find a delegate. You know, and when the delegates get their book to look through, it's this thick wad of paper full of stuff that is dialogue. And I think that's the important thing that gets forgotten. And that's what I'm trying to say is, I think we sometimes participate in institutionalized church being something outside of ourselves. And I just, my plea, and I don't think that there's an answer to this particular question we're talking about tonight, but I'm just saying that there is a process, and that sometimes we participate in the apathy without knowing it.
Okay. It is 10 o'clock, but I also know that the tape goes just a little bit longer than 60 minutes. So what I want to do is, the people who have had their hands raised, I'd like to just deal with, if you've already had your hand in the air, let's take what you got to say, and then when those people are done, we'll stop. Now, I'm going to trust you not to raise your hand if you haven't had it up before. Okay, yes.
In response to your question, could I ask you to repeat it, because I don't want to get what I said wrong.
Which question? When we first started
that he
said with?
Right before he commanded down below us to respond. Or don't you remember?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay, well, it was something to the effect where if the church should or should not decide whether or not. Okay, if I remember.
Okay.
Okay, do you feel that. Does it matter to you if the church says pro whatever? Does it matter to you? I personally think it matters to me if the church is against abortion and I'm going to go get one. You know, I'll think about that. I'll think, am what I'm doing morally right? Is it morally right for me to go get an abortion when the church says it's not? When the Pope says it's not? You know, but I'm going to think about that, but I'm probably still going to do what I personally think. And regardless if there's a higher power
like the Catholics have the Pope. I don't know what the Lutherans have. I'm not religious.
Who's got a bishop?
Yeah, okay. Okay, regardless of what the bishop says, I'm still going to, and this isn't, and, you know, it's not because I don't respect him or don't believe what he says is right, but in this particular case, I think I do what I feel is best for me, not for the bishop.
Right. Which is interesting. Our bishop has, I think we'd want to say that the Lutheran Church doesn't have a bishop that makes statements, and he's not supposed to make political statements. It is a he in this case. But he has written at least one letter to every pastor in the country about one particular social issue. So he's doing it. It's curious. Who else had their hand in the air? Okay, yes.
We talked about how we discuss things in the political realm and in the church. In politics, decisions are made by a majority vote, and then they're decided. But you find that almost every issue comes back again, and they're redecided. And that happens in the church, too. But in the church, we're called to love one another and to be a part of a community and to dialogue with one another and to care about each other. That doesn't happen in the political realm in the same context. In that way, I can disagree with someone in Synod Assembly on almost every major issue, but when he gets picked up for falling limp in front of an abortion clinic and gets brutalized by the police, I can support him for his courage and what he's doing, what he believes. And in that way, I think we can all be supportive of one another and being faithful and living out our faith the best we can. And we can disagree, and the dialogue is important. If it wasn't important, we wouldn't all be here tonight.
Yeah. Last one.
I don't think that making a statement by the church is necessarily a healthy activity. It can take the decision-making process away from the person, and it can serve as a scapegoat, or even though I may not agree with them, they can say, this is what my church says. And I think when religion gets right down to it, it's a personal thing. And it's you that needs to make the decision regardless of what anybody might say.
Far back? Okay. Last one.
The thing that disturbs me about this discussion is that, at least in my opinion, there's a person or a being that does not have the ability to make a decision here. And that's the being in the womb. And so I'm not sure, you know, what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, you can't mess with my freedom. The church shouldn't be making, you know, statements on my behalf. But we're trying to make a statement on another being's behalf that has no way of letting us know what this person or what this being feels or thinks. So I think that's something we haven't touched upon in this discussion.
Okay. With love, respect, and relief, we'll close this. Okay? Thank you for coming. Very much.